This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What an unbelievable weekend. Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome into Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM Channel 158. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live, as always, in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. And I got to tell you, coming off of the 4th of July weekend, which was awesome just for fun. I love the holiday. I love everything about it. But I'm very envious of all of the people today. JVT, I'm walking in, and they're celebrating a long weekend. They're taking the extra Monday off, going to the pool. Like 80% of the people I've seen here today are in bathing suits.
I mean, we have such a hard job. It's really brutal to have to deal with this sort of thing. So I can understand how you feel having to grind through what our usual spot is. But I thought it was a long weekend. It felt like a long weekend. It was pretty good.
It was good. I slept a lot yesterday, which, I mean, that'll tell you how my Saturday went. We'll get into that maybe a little bit later. We'll discuss and break down the results from the hot dog
Saturday
eating contest.
My Saturday was perfectly normal.
When we grade our best bets later on in the show. But speaking of the grind, we are in the thick of it. Major League Baseball, this is the last week before the All-Star Week, and we got a game that's about to get underway in a few moments. So before we hit the rundown, let's hit this masterpiece. Phillies and Royals going head-to-head here. Series split. Phillies took game one. Kansas City won yesterday 5-2. But a bounce back, you assume, for Philadelphia with their ace, Christopher Sanchez, on the hill. They're more than $2 favorites here. I'm seeing minus 224 at DraftKings. And the Royals going with Noah Cameron, who already like a near 5 ERA for the season, but the last couple games in particular been pretty rough for our boy.
Let's look at the last four specifically for Noah Cameron. It has not been good, to your point. He has allowed 4+ earned runs in 3 of his last 4 starts. The lone, because I say 3 of his last 4, the bright spot is 3 earned runs allowed. If you look at his last 4 in totality, an ERA of 9, an expected ERA of 8.20, a 6.33 fielding independent, and a 5.81 expected fielding independent. So you could make the argument that there's room for regression from get out of the league to absolutely abhorrent. So maybe Noah Cameron does have good things coming for him. But I will say, an interesting wrinkle, if you will, Christopher Sanchez. Look, on the surface, ERA of 2.00. We know how good he is. Expected numbers are all under 3. Last start, 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, 2 walks, no earned runs, struck out 9. But he's allowed 4+ earned runs in 2 of his last 4 starts. But even then, ERA is at 3.80. Expected ERA is at 3.17. Some of the noise when it comes to the home runs and the potential of giving them up, 4.12 on the fielding independent. So maybe there's something there. But I would just say this. I think the market's priced in Noah Cameron pretty well. We saw overnight to minus 168 at Circa. We're up to minus 205. So I think the market is already in on what Noah Cameron is. And if you wanted to fade him, well, you're probably not probably you're missing out unless for some reason you make this like minus 225. Hate to say it. I think it'd be Royals or nothing, and it will be nothing for me because I don't want to trust Noah Cameron to put me in a position to do anything good.
Yeah, they're a big favorite. And even if you're laying the run line here, it's like minus 135 roughly. What I was looking to, and I'm curious your opinion on just quickly, I was looking at the game over 8.5 because you, even what you said about Sanchez, but then you've got the bullpen backing him up. That's bottom third in the league right now as well. Noah Cameron on the other side, who's expected ERA the last 2 weeks is around 9.4. Their team total for the Phillies as well, set 5.5. Like, there were a couple things I was looking at just in terms of us getting runs on a nice weather day. It's supposed to be in the mid-80s-ish, slight wind blowing out. Like, could we get some runs here just in all?
I mean, I think you probably could, especially when you're talking about the low total and given the profile of the two guys and what everything that you've brought up here, especially Cameron, too. Maybe if you want to just isolate, as we always talk about, right, the different ways to attack this, do you want to trust that the Royals are going to carry their weight? Or do you want to eliminate their part of the equation and go with the Phillies team total over as opposed to that? But as you mentioned, part of your handicap is being that the Phillies bullpen. But what if Christopher Sanchez comes in, gives you those 7 strong innings, right? And then you really are up against it from getting the other team to contribute. So I would isolate it personally to just take it on Cameron, maybe in a first 5 team total. Again, there's so many ways to whittle this down and the ways that you handicap it, especially for some of these pitchers. Just a bunch of different ways to cut it out.
Phillies team total has cash in 10 of the last 14 games. The bats have gotten hot, so maybe the over 5.5 could be worth a look. Okay. Hey, we'll have more baseball a little bit later on in the show, but let's set the table for what is a big 2 hours to come on a Monday.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
Well, JVT, I mentioned it being a crazy weekend in sports, so only natural to start off the week with a little call me crazy, but a few strong opinions we're going to break down a little bit later on in the show. You have one item in particular. I'm genuinely curious if you believe or not.
Is it the baseball one or the basketball
one? It's the baseball
one. Okay, I do. I do genuinely believe it. So I guess you'll call me crazy, but there is a team that is in a very, very big hole that maybe, just maybe, might be starting to climb its way out. So we'll have to discuss.
I know free agency has been the bell of the ball when it comes to the NBA, but maybe a new one in Vegas coming up this week with Summer League about to get underway. And if you are looking to bet it, JVT has some rules to live by for Summer League.
Yeah, we've had generally pretty good success in the last few years of at least getting some futures pretty live that are going down at some big numbers to the tournament in the Summer League. Last year, one of the, I don't know if you want to call it a bad beat, but I think it was. Will Hill will remember this if he's watched. He watches quite a bit. Had the Hawks at 85-1 to win the NBA Summer League. They went undefeated in group play, but because of tiebreakers, did not make it into the playoff. So you can get some really good opportunities if you're sifted through some of these rosters. By the way, at me, JVT, you have a Google Doc up of all the rosters that have been posted. We're only waiting for 5 official announcements. So 25 of the 30 teams that will be out there have their rosters posted. You can sift through there. But we'll talk about some of the parameters, some of the archetypes of the teams that you want to have success in a Summer League format.
And as you said, the format, that's important to recognize and understand as well. So we'll also have a little WNBA conversation a little bit later on, some college football. But obviously, as the World Cup rolls on, that is our focal point today. Team USA in action and freedom for flow. Team USA star Filarin Balogun's red card suspension overturned by FIFA yesterday afternoon will reportedly play in tonight's round of 16 match against Belgium. Now, there are a lot of layers to this, including President Trump's call to the president of FIFA, paired with the question as to whether or not that overturned ruling would even stand after Belgium then formally objected this morning and appealed the decision. FIFA's appeals committee, however, just about an hour or so ago, rendered the request submitted by the Royal Belgian Football Association as, quote, inadmissible. So Flo Balogun will be out there on the pitch today. Before we get into our reaction to all of this and our thoughts on tonight's match, let's hear from the head man in charge of the U.S. men's national team, Mauricio Pochettino, on the red card getting overturned.
We were punished enough against Bosnia-Herzegovina to play with 10 men, 30 minutes, in a decision that was complete unfair. But it's not only because I am the head coach of the U.S. men national team, I need to defend my side. It's only because I think it's a 100% or 99%, because always some people, you know, but 99.9% that we all, you know, agree that was an unfair red card.
Meanwhile, the Belgium head coach, JVT, Rudy Garcia, said, quote, and this is translated, the quote, but said, I thought the World Cup was in July, not April. It's now April Fools. We're not defending the national team or the federation. We're defending football. How have you unpacked all this last 24 hours?
Well, okay, let's just get to the bottom line here. This is par for the course for FIFA. We benefit as Americans, but I am stunned that one of the most corrupt sports organizations, or maybe the most corrupt sports organization, has decided to make it up and it goes along and does something to benefit the host nation, which has some leverage here. I mean, I don't think anybody should be surprised by this. And the precedent has been set. You can go all the way back. I mean, we can just go back years and years of the levels of crooked nature that has been with FIFA. So, look, we benefit. It's going to be great. Cool. We get Balogun out there. I know that you were going to bring this up. There is some precedent when it comes to guys who should be punished but are not. They believe Cristiano Ronaldo, correct?
Yeah. That's one part of it. This happened just before the World Cup in the World Cup qualifier against Ireland. He received a 3-game suspension, which was then rescinded the final 2 games that were for the 1-year probation period, which is what Balogun now has here. An Argentina defender and an Ecuador midfielder, both in April, had 1-game bans for deferred red cards and qualifiers, also allowing them to be available for their World Cup openers. But the first time we saw this in the World Cup was actually, if you want to go all the way back in history, to 1962. A player from Brazil was ejected from the World Cup semifinal, ends up getting to play in the final. So that was even arguably more impactful there for one of their stars to be available.
I think what gets people, and rightfully so, is just the outward nature of the way that this happened, which is not only President Trump, but also many inside of the organization, different lawyers, Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, Scott Goodwin, who is a donor to U.S. soccer, all apparently made some sort of call or pressure on FIFA to get this done, and it gets done. So I think that is surprising to some. We could talk about the actual nuts and bolts of why that shouldn't happen, but at this point, that's not our job. Now our point is to say, all right, what are you going to do with the U.S. now that they get Balogun back and how they're going to operate? I know I was talking with Kelly and Gil had mentioned this on their program that he thinks that maybe Pochettino's going to play the good guy role and maybe have him come off the bench. Screw that. He should start. I mean, if this is the rule, this is the rule. We're going to play full strength. We're going to go at this. And I know that our own Alex Blowers, who is up on the website at VSiN.com with his article, did think that this is going to be an inspirational type of push for Belgium, considering twofold. One, you're getting screwed here. But two, this is the last run, pretty much, for, as he called it, the golden era of soccer in Belgium. I mean, if you've watched soccer over the years, as many of us have, especially the World Cup, De Bruyne and Lukaku, these are all really good names. We're all long in the tooth. It's going to be the last go at it. And you're getting cheated out of potentially your last match on this stage. From an emotional handicapping standpoint, that makes a ton of sense if you're looking in that regard.
I know Alex Crook on VSiN by the Books had a similar sentiment. We'll play some of that sound for you a little bit later on. We'll also hear from U.S. men's national team legend Eric Winalda. He nailed the handicap last week. In about 30 minutes, he'll join us on the air, get his opinion on this thing. But to your point, so initially when this news came down that Flo was going to play, Team USA was bet up from around minus 110, minus 115, all the way out to minus 140 to advance. We've seen a little bit of buyback here. So Team USA sitting minus 130, Belgium plus 105 on the 90-minute line, USA plus 145, Belgium plus 185, the draw plus 240, and the goal total for this one sitting 2.5, minus 155 to the over. Patrick Everson, a Vegas insider, in an interview with Caesars VP of Trading, Craig Mucklow, yesterday said, "We anticipated Monday's USA game breaking the handle record, but the madness at the Azteca surpassed all records by such an altitude, it might not be broken now." How about that Mexico-England match yesterday?
I mean, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment and somebody who, obviously, who has an affinity for one of the sides that participated. That was arguably one of the best matches of the entire tournament so far.
Yes.
The atmosphere, the way that it was getting played, the 2-0 lead immediately for England in such a downfall, and you're thinking, oh boy, this is it. Like, Mexico's going to get run out. You immediately get that thing cut in half. The back and forth nature of it, the red card, everything that went into that game was absolutely fantastic. Somebody breaks their wrist jumping over a wall.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing?
Poor Jordan Henderson. That looked rough. Next up, England will face Norway. Good for you. Erling Haaland had a day. We will discuss a golden boot a little bit later on as well. But you hear that music. We got to take our first time out of the day. We're just getting started here on Money Moves. Stick around. So much more to come on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, let me get your attention real quick, podcast listeners. I've got something for you that feels too good to be true. First, credit where credit is due. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already leveling up your betting game. You're riding along with our best bets and top angles. And when there's a good game on, you're probably getting involved with a few props and alt markets as well. But there's one more layer if you really want to step things up, and that's VSiN Pro. Yeah, I've mentioned it before, but things are only getting better for our pro subscribers. We just rolled out our MLB prop projections, breaking down some of the best edges across strikeouts, hits, home runs, and more. And that's on top of everything else pro subscribers already get, including public betting splits, expert picks, and betting guides across the sports calendar. If you haven't tried it yet, stop sleeping on it. You can get your first month for just $9.99 or save big with promo code POD26 on an annual subscription. Hit the link in the description and start cashing in with VSiN Pro. All right, now back to the show.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, back here on Money Moves, Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you as the World Cup action rolls on. I know we discussed all of the Team USA elements of this on the surface last segment. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll have former U.S. men's national team member and legend Eric Winalda join the program, get his thoughts on how all of this transpired, as well as the match with Portugal and Spain that's set to begin in under an hour in Dallas. JBT, Spain barely had to break a sweat in the round of 32, beat up on Austria 3-0. We did capitalize on that one after what was a slow start to the tournament. Meanwhile, Portugal barely gets past Croatia 2-1 in the round of 32. A literal hair kept this match from being tied late. I know the Portugal midfield has been boasted as one of the best, if not the best, in the entire world at this point. But as a team, Portugal's been pretty disappointing to this point. How do you think they fare today against Spain?
I mean, I think that's the case. So we have seen four of these matches for Portugal, and two of them, their expected goals metric floating around a half, have not really generated much in two of those. Much of the total expected goals that they have generated up to this point of the tournament come from one game, and that is the matchup against Uzbekistan, where they piled on five goals, won 5-0, and really kind of took some frustrations out on their opponent. You look at the game that they had played right before the end of group, right before Croatia, where they played Colombia, and while that was a scoreless draw, expected goals well in favor of Colombia, and even against Croatia, there too was a tightly contested affair. So I think overall, it's not really been a team that, to your point, you've been overtly impressed with. And so why would I move away from what we have talked about with this Spanish side, which is how good they are defensively. Clean sheet up to this point in the tournament. They have not allowed a goal yet. I don't think that I would expect anything different. And when some of this is so tied into how constipated the Portuguese offense can be, especially because they rely too much on Cristiano Ronaldo when he doesn't have a place. I mean, You look at that game against Croatia, and they take him off, and immediately you're getting creativity, you're getting shots into the box, you're setting guys up. Those were the things that were really working instead of funneling all of these attempts to one guy, and I think that really plays into Spain's favor. So anyway, so the whole point here being, why not go back to Spain to win to nil at plus 230 tonight?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they're the better team. I see this as a 2-0, or maybe Portugal could squeak out a goal here, make it a 2-1 type of a game. Regardless, I end up playing Spain on the 90-minute money line here, minus 105. Shop around, though. They're still as low as minus 110 in the market, but minus 115, minus 113 seems to be the prevailing number right now for them to that end. Minus 225 to advance. Goal total for this whole thing sitting 2.5. But the Spain team total at 1.5, I think, is an intriguing way to look at this one, too, if you're looking for some alternate angles. But I am one of my official plays later on, and obviously we'll have this game kicking off early, so I have to give it out now, is Spain on the money line.
Yeah, I played Spain to win a nil plus 230. I know, I believe our own Patrick Maher does like the game over the total, so that is worth pointing out. And he was on with our guys right before us on prop points to give you an idea of that. So you can go back and listen to that, VSiN.com, or wherever you get your podcast. But that's worth pointing out as well, because Patrick's got a pretty deep knowledge of the game.
One thing I will say about this one is I didn't realize historically how much Portugal has come to play in these matchups against Spain in particular.
It's a rivalry, right?
Yeah. Six of the last seven have ended in a 90-minute draw. Most recently, the UEFA Nations League final in 2025, 2-2 after 90 minutes, with Portugal eventually winning the game on penalties. Their last World Cup match finished in a 3-3 draw in 18. Cristiano Ronaldo had a hat-trick. He is obviously not the same player now that he was then, but worth noting, at least these games have been more competitive, and a lot of them have gone to a draw. And the draw price for Inquiring Minds today, plus 255. Okay, let's get to a little NBA, because I was very intrigued when you put this in the rundown earlier today about Summer League and the format and things that people need to know before they start betting these games. The action here in Vegas won't begin until Thursday. What do people need to know ahead of the action?
Yeah, so I think it's, first off, all 30 teams are going to participate, but we've talked about this a ton. And for those who are with us now, I've written about this. I sent you an old article. It's kind of the same things, but every single Summer League, I like to stick to, we'll call them three principles, but I was bored this morning and we decided to label them as commandments. So these are
and we have the artwork to pair with it.
So these are our three Summer League commandments as we get into Summer League play, which starts on Thursday out here in Las Vegas. So the first ones, and these are in order. These are ranked. Thou shalt have NBA veterans. This is what you want, right? You want guys who are 1 or 2 years into their career that have played really, like, you need starters minutes, but you need guys that have played some really strong games in the NBA when it terms of minutes played, things like that. You know, we'll go, for example, this is the favorite right now. Let me double check the odds, see if I'm correct here. Yeah, the favorite coming into this, the Utah Jazz at 8-1. Part of the reason is their roster is stacked because they have blue chip talent, which we'll get to momentarily. But on their roster, the Stormy is Cody Williams, who has played 2 years in the NBA already and took some really good steps at the end of last year when the Jazz were tanking, and Ace Bailey, their first-round pick from last year, who got some really good run, obviously, throughout the entire year, played over 60 games, showed improvement as the season went along. And so those two alone are really going to help you out, because think about how much slower a game feels playing in the NBA in the regular season versus a pickup game, essentially, exhibition matchup against a bunch of either college rookies and or, you know, we'll get into the longer tooth and the veteran guys coming in from Europe, whatever it is, and teams that have just been put together. These guys have played together. They have played at a high level, and they have played a lot of minutes at a higher level than what they're going to experience at the Thomas and Mack Center or Cox Pavilion. So you want those guys because generally they will carry you a little bit farther. The other thing that you want here, your second commandment, so our first is thou shalt have NBA veterans. Our second commandment here is thou shalt have blue chip rookies. That's what you want. You want these guys that are lottery selections that are going to get some really good run. I'm going to keep using the Jazz as an example because there is a reason why they are favored. This is not just a guessing game. There are some intricacies to this, which we'll get to. But who are your blue chip rookies? Well, Darren Peterson the other day, while he turned the ball over quite a bit, is on the Jazz roster. And that is a blue chip rookie. You've ever seen one. He is going to be awesome in this kind of a setting. Again, I like to lean a little bit more on these blue chip rookies being backcourt players, just because in a flow like this, exhibition setting, having the ball in your hands as opposed to being a front court guy, where you need to rely on others to set you up. There are examples that are aberrations of that, but you want those sort of dudes that are going to be out there. And then finally, I think the final commandment that you want here, and this is, again, these are ranked, so these are in terms of importance, but our third commandment is thou shalt have journeyman. And this one does matter because you get a lot of examples of these guys who have played overseas or have done a bunch of different things that are trying to fight their way back into the league in some form or fashion. And they have a lot of experience playing in Europe or otherwise. And so if you go back over past years, there's tons of examples of guys who have come in and really done a good job that are literally older. And you want a physically mature body as well. I mean, that really helps. If I'm 26 years old, 25 years old, and I'm coming in from Europe and I've been banging around with all of these big dudes, and now I get to come out here and play against an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old just breaking into it. One of the examples that I always go back to is 2022, Javon Freeman Liberty. He came out in the 2022 draft as a senior, participated in a second summer league in Chicago in 2023, 21.2 points per game. Yeah. The season after that, he played for Toronto, 14.3 points in four games. So you have guys like that who have been playing, whether it's Europe or whatever it is, those types of dudes that have had that success but have those minutes on their bodies, that really helps too because you're just bigger, stronger, faster, and you're playing for something a little bit more than guys who just got drafted and who know, hey, you know, my roster spot is good. For a guy like that,
okay,
we're going hard, and I think I'm gonna dominate, and I think those sort of things do help.
And I think it's cool because we'll have this discussion not only big picture but on a game by game basis. Real quickly, just to go back to Darren Peterson, who you mentioned because you brought up the turnovers, he was awesome. I don't know if you've seen some of the stuff coming out of this, but 28 points, 11 to 21 shooting. He scored like the minute that that the ball hit his hands on that opening possession, just was off and running after just a week of practice with these guys. So imagine as he continues to go. That said, from a format standpoint and how this thing is scored as you try to work your way up to being in that title tilt, what do people need to know there?
I mean, top four teams just make the postseason. And as Will Hill will remember, and we have discussed before, we had 85-1 on the Atlanta Hawks last year to win the whole thing. And they went undefeated, just like we expected. And then they missed out on the playoffs. So, you know, it's your top four teams, and you can get squeezed out because of point differential and then head-to-head. So these results do matter, but point differential is pretty big. And it'll come down because, look, you're only playing four games before you get to the playoffs. You can't play everybody, obviously. So that kind of thing will get you. But look around at some of these teams, man. Like, you want that. Last year, if I remember correctly, it was the Hornets who ended up winning it. Yep. That was a really good mix of guys who were both veterans, had played in the NBA a couple of years or a year, and then, of course, had some really good high-end rookies as well. The Thunder had some pretty good performances, too, because of guys like A.J. Mitchell, who are coming out and playing very well. So that's what you really want for some of these guys, and it's really worth looking at.
We will be breaking this down as we get closer as well. Yeah, we'll look at some futures tomorrow. Obviously, games getting underway Thursday, as we mentioned. But speaking of tomorrow, do want to remind you, if you want unlimited access to everything we do at VSiN, you want the breakdowns of Summer League or Major League Baseball or whatever it is, including our picks page, come join us now while you still can for a discounted rate. We are celebrating the 4th of July for a couple more days through tomorrow for just $299. You can get two full years of VSiN Pro access for nearly 70% of the regular monthly price. You get our NFL season betting guide that's out now, the best bets, as I mentioned, bet splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, and so much more. But don't wait, because the 4th of July special disappears after tomorrow. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can lock in those 2 years of VSiN Pro for just $299. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Speaking of football, as I mentioned, the NFL betting guide, we'll get back to football in a moment when we return. Monday Night Football, actually, out there at Lumen Field in Seattle today for Team USA. Eric Winalda is going to join us coming up next, but instead of the Seattle Seahawks out there, it is Team USA trying to get support of the 12th man. Should be a fun one.
Got to get Winalda some props, too. His daughter with a big play over the weekend, playing soccer on her own.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It was in the group chat.
What did I tell you about the group chat?
Justin, what are we doing?
I was asleep.
What are we working with
here? I was asleep. We'll be right back. Don't go anymore.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Seattle tonight, but instead of the Seahawks, it's the U.S. men's national team looking to benefit from the 12th man. Team USA taking on Belgium tonight at Lumen Field. The big news, of course, though, the red card rescinded for Flo Balogun. To help us break it all down and then some, Eric Winalda, kind enough to join us once again on the Progressive Guest Line, U.S. National Soccer Team Hall of Famer, host of Winalda Talks Football as well on SiriusXM FC. And let's just jump right into that quickly, Eric. What's more surprising, the way the red card was given to Balogun to begin with, or the fact that FIFA came out now and has rescinded the decision?
Well, it's unprecedented within the tournament. I mean, obviously, there was a little bit of precedent before because of the Ronaldo situation, who had received a red card. And then his suspension was suspended, but that was because it was in qualifiers. This is different. This is an incredible decision. I think the rest of the tournament, the rest of the teams, especially Belgium, who's already issued a statement, you know, rightly so, are pretty upset about this. As Americans, we're thrilled. The call was terrible, though. And going back to it, and just so everybody's clear, we all know Infantino got a call from President Trump. Those are just two guys talking, so everybody calm down. This was an independent committee that made a decision to alter the pathway of whether he was able to stay in the tournament or not. So it had nothing to do with those two guys. Just want to make that very clear. I mean, I've been watching everybody freak out about that. I think it was 12 people on that committee. It was a unanimous vote that they felt that it was an unjust decision and it would be unfortunate for Balogun not to play. Even though they're going to catch a lot of heat for this, we should be thrilled that he's back on the field. But this is obviously a talking point today.
All right, so let's talk about Balogun himself and what this means for Team USA. What does he bring to this offense? How effective is he? And just what's the difference knowing that he's now going to be out there for this group?
Well, he's the speed option, to be honest. I mean, the other guys that occupy that spot, we saw a little bit of Haji Wright, barely any of them, and a little bit of Pepe in this tournament. But Balogun just makes really, really good runs, and he's powerful. And so he's constantly putting a back line under pressure. He's able to hold the ball in spots where he needs to. He'll take his fair shot of hit. I mean, his fair share of hits too, and he doesn't react, which is a test of character when you got guys kicking the hell out of you and you don't react and you don't. That's the irony of the red card. But I think if there's anybody that we want in front of the goal when they get finished with a speed play and they pass it to somebody, he's our guy. He's in great form. He's got a great head on his shoulder, so hoping for another big day for him.
There's been a lot of conversation about what potentially this could do for Belgium as maybe a rallying cry for them, banding them together. And we've seen them, at least in the betting market, get played a little bit here early. You've been pretty nails with your predictions to this point. I know you did a great job with us last week when you were on making a couple picks. How do you think this game ultimately plays out tonight?
Well, I had 2-2 until the end, right? I mean, I still get to own that. I'm going to hang my hat on that. It was 2-2 until it went into the extra time. But yeah, I have been really fortunate with just some of these matchups. And that's the thing about soccer, different than other sports, is you got to look at the matchups. You got to actually wait until that last hour before you see the lineups and see who's going up against who before you make a real decision. I think this is an aging team. I think that this is a coach who, let me remind everybody, his name is Rudy Garcia. He was the coach of Roma. He once kicked Michael Bradley, our captain, off the team because he was American. He doesn't have like a high opinion, even now, of the American team. And that is his rally cry. He's like, if you dare lose to these guys, then which is totally wrong and completely outdated, but that would be his take. I think Belgium is an aging team. I don't think we should be scared of them at all. And if you look at their back line and some of the performances that they've had already, the matchups work in our favor, especially Tillman. Tillman going up against one of their center backs who plays at Eintracht Frankfurt, absolutely had a field day with him in January. I know that's a long ways away, but if there's a confidence problem, it's going to be with them, not with us.
You know, really quickly, before we move on to the next matchup, narratively, Eric, what does this game mean for Belgium, especially if they get eliminated? Because you mentioned they're an aging team. There's a lot of big names that I would assume are not going to be on the next World Cup team. And every match that they have to play and every time they advance, there seems to be some more pressure on a group that is on its way out the door, no?
Yeah, and then we've kind of seen that a few times in this competition. It's hard to believe that Brazil is out of this tournament, the Netherlands are out of this tournament, Germany has been eliminated, and it's a similar theme. You know, Kevin De Bruyne is the one we're talking about. This is the guy that held pulled the strings for this team for years. They were called the golden era where with him, Lukaku, who's carrying a couple of extra pounds, but he's honestly still a menace sometimes. But I just feel like they know this is their last chance, and they got to bring energy, and that's the one thing they don't have. They will not be able to match the energy of our midfield We'll probably overrun them. Our plan should be to get them to lose the ball in their own end of the field on a lackadaisical play and then punish. So I'm going pretty high on this. I think the U.S. will score three goals, and I don't think we'll keep it out of our net. I think we might maybe one, but 3-1 would be my guess as a final score. I think we'll take them out.
Former U.S. men's national team legend Eric Winalda joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Speaking of midfields, we got two of the best going head-to-head in the world today with Portugal and Spain. Although, as we talked about in the last segment, Eric, Portugal largely disappointing what we have seen from them in the World Cup to this point. How do you see that one playing out in about 20 minutes between Portugal and Spain?
Well, I don't know which is more of a controversial call. Yeah, Croatia not getting that goal or us getting Balogun back. They're both pretty bad.
Yeah.
When you start talking about the effect it's had on the mentality of the team. Ronaldo is the focal point. I think he gets a penalty kick, obviously, but they're not the same team anymore, and he's not the same player anymore. This is a difficult one to call, though. I think it'll be a tactical battle, very pragmatic, and probably a low-scoring affair because they're both kind of wary of what the other one's capable of. We're just going to wait for that moment. So it's just like a boxing match where two teams probably won't come out of their their corner until I don't know. I mean, maybe the sixth, seventh round. So this might take a while before they start really going after each other.
You know, Eric, when it comes to Portugal and Ronaldo, we keep hearing about Ronaldo to an extent holding this team back because of his placement on the roster and what is happening. Can you contextualize that for us? What does his presence do for a midfield that by all accounts is extremely talented, but maybe not playing up to its expectation with him on the field?
Well, we've already seen it. I mean, there's a lot of great crosses. Look, I'm a forward. I know my job. My job is to get there first, right? And to get in front of my guy and to basically just a little touch, a little flick, anything that's going to get on the end of some of these brilliant crosses. We saw it yesterday with Haaland. Haaland needed one moment and he outmuscled Gabriel and that was it. I mean, he touched the ball like 12 times prior to that moment. It's okay if Ronaldo, it goes about his business the same way, but in that moment, in that second that they need him to be a foot in front of his guy, he can't do it anymore. So they're putting the passes in the right spots, and what's happening is he's just not getting there. We've seen it multiple times. I mean, and so, you know, Gonzalez comes in and gets a great goal on the header. That's just something that Ronaldo can't do anymore. And I get the ego. I get the realities of who he is, but he's not the same guy he used to be, and he's still holding them back. I don't care what anybody says.
All right, before we get you out of here, because I know you got a round to play, but I believe that I saw a Winalda on a pitch over the weekend for the San Diego Wave. A big moment for your family or what?
No, it's pretty cool, man. The 4th of July is always a big day. The Wave taking on the last year's champion, right? And my daughter got to play the most minutes she's played in the NWSL. She made a really big play at the end. So the Winalda family was celebrating that. And just for your listeners, I am the only MLS dad with an NWSL daughter. We're the first to ever do that. So we're pretty proud. I'm really proud of her, though. She's doing great.
That's awesome. Glad we got to let you brag a little bit, Eric. Thank you so much for the time.
Yeah,
we appreciate it.
I'm going to brag about her a lot. She's worth bragging about.
As you should. Shoot a good round out there today. We appreciate you taking some time for us.
Always. Love you guys. See ya.
Wow. Eric Winalda, really appreciate
love
the time.
Love you too.
And yeah, JVT was showing me the highlight in the last commercial break.
It's a great effort play.
What a hustle play, dude. That's, she's fast.
It's 1-0, extra time. She's chasing down a loose ball. Goaltender comes too far out. She deflects it because the goaltender and gets it all the way up to her forward. And just like that, it's a 2-0 lead.
What did you think of his breakdown of how the U.S. should handle Belgium matchup-wise
today? I think he's right. One of the things that I keep hanging on to, and I don't know how it translates personally, but he gave me a little bit more confidence in it, but is that aspect of this team aging. A lot of their key role players, you know, in their mid to higher 30s, and I think that you have an athletic advantage if you're Team USA in certain aspects here, and you should be able to work this thing in your favor, especially with Flo Balogun back out there. So, I'm not going out on a limb here. We're all Americans and whatnot. I think Team USA's got a pretty good shot to get a little bit of revenge for when they played in the friendlies.
This number keeps coming down as we speak. It was minus 140 yesterday, minus 125 right now. Should be a great match, but I'm all USA, baby. The only thing I like about Belgium is waffles, and even today I might be throwing out the waffle maker. What do you say?
I think people are going to get mad at you now, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can't do
those
things.
Do I have to issue an apology?
You don't look good.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here on Money Moves, live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. And if you're betting at Circa Sportsbook, how about this? For a limited time, you can fund your wagers and contest entries with crypto using BurraPay and pay no BurraPay transaction fees. It's fast, secure, just another way Circa continues to innovate for us as sports bettors. Head over to BurraPay.com if you want to learn more and take advantage of the fee-free crypto wagering before August 31st, exclusively at the Circa Sportsbook here at Circa Resort and Casino. BurraPay transaction fees waived as part of the campaign. Standard cryptocurrency network and exchange fees may apply. Now, if I were to tell you, JVT, that the Royals and Phillies are playing together, Christopher Sanchez going for Philadelphia, and after one inning, the score was 6-1, who would you think would be in the lead?
I would think that, knowing the setup and where we're at, that the Kansas City Royals, after giving up a 1-0 lead because Noah Cameron got off to a shaky start, then jumped all over Christopher Sanchez and pounded him for 6 earned runs in the bottom of the first. That's exactly what I would think.
I hate you so much because you – it's not fair when you know the answer, okay? Unbelievable start for the Royals today as big underdogs. We were talking about this in the very start of the show today. Philadelphia was out to nearly minus 230 on the money line here. They find themselves down 6-1 with their ace on the hill right away. What happened to Christopher Sanchez?
Well, you walk the leadoff guy, so that's never really great. Bobby Witt grounds into a fielder's choice. You advance the runner. After a single, you get somebody else to get on as well. And then just like that, you get a run driven in, you get another hit. It was just kind of like death by paper cut. It was fielder's choice, single, and then when you've got three guys on, guess what's going to happen? Or two guys on with a hitter up, you can't give up a homer in that situation, and that's exactly what happened. So after a rough start to the inning, all of a sudden it is 6-1 Kansas City Royals, and it's just for pointing out, as we had discussed to start the show, that the fact that first off, market had really come in against Cameron, which I think was proper, but that in two of the last four starts, Christopher Sanchez had allowed 4+ earned runs. He had bounced back nicely in his last start, but we had at least seen some, I don't want to call it regression because there was nothing really in the numbers, but we had seen a step back in his performances as of late. And here we have another one, big crooked number up there on his stat line, and we're only one inning in. So we will see if he can bounce back. But one inning, 5 hits, 6 earned runs, 1 strikeout, 1 walk, and a homer allowed.
Woof. We'll break down the MLB card at large today a little bit later on in the show, but I do have a baseball take from the weekend that is worth discussing as we get into Call Me Crazy Butt on an Overreaction Monday.
Put on your tinfoil hats.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
The whole world gone crazy.
For Call Me Crazy, but...
Okay, for anyone who missed it yesterday, Yuri Perez had a shot for a perfect game against the A's and was yanked after 7. Call Me Crazy, but... don't you at least send him out for the 8th inning? And I definitely understand from a team manager perspective, if you're Clayton McCullough in this spot, you're thinking big picture. As he said after the game, right, you're thinking beyond the regular season. Perez is just coming off the IL. His pitch count was getting up there. But to say afterwards there was no consideration of going batter to batter, that's wild to me, especially considering he was on IL for the groin. His Tommy John was 2 years ago. The arm is fine. 92 pitches, following, by the way, a 9-pitch seventh. Just send him out for the 8th inning. Do you know how many perfect games there are in Major League Baseball history? 24. Give the guy a shot, or at least give him the decision, right, to say whether or not he wants to go back out for one more.
If it was the 9th inning, I think I'd be a little bit more on your side. But you have, like, what's the realistic outcome here already at 92 pitches through 7 innings?
It's probably not going to happen, right?
Okay. We know. So what are we complaining about?
But I'm just saying, with a shot at something that hasn't been done in so, and I understand, like, this is the era that we are in baseball now. This is what baseball has become. You don't care about history. You just care about health, and that's fine. But wouldn't you at least
say... seems like a pretty important statement.
Wouldn't you at least say to him, hey, do you want to go out for one more?
No. You're protecting him from himself. Now, like you mentioned, by the way, I would just say that, like, you know, a thigh injury can occur. I know you mentioned that it was like, well, it's not his arm. Yeah, I mean, you can still tweak that if you're pitching, if you're overworking it, especially when you're just recently back. I think we do this all the time with the baseball stuff. I'm sorry, who cares? Because guess what's going to happen? He's going to put him back out there. He's going to re-injure whatever it is. And then our story is going to be, why'd you put him back out there? We're never going to be happy. He still had 2 innings left. Again, If you were at 92 heading into the final inning, then I think I'm a little bit more on board with maybe trying him out. Realistically, already at about 92 pitches, what was the expectation over two innings that he had to have?
It's not like this is a sixth inning. You got to make a change and you're going for a combined no-hitter. Like, there's a chance to do something that's only been done once in the last 14 years. Like, why not? Especially, like I said, coming off a nine-pitch seventh, right? Like, if you can just give him a shot. That's all I'm saying. Okay, sure. You go next.
All right, call me crazy, but...
Oh, also, by the way, the baseball gods clearly weren't pleased either because the Marlins nearly effed it up, and we saw the A's come all the way back. So,
correct.
FYI.
Benevolent gods, nonetheless. Call me crazy, but the Tigers. Yeah, they're not dead yet, I don't think, man.
I think you're crazy.
You think I'm crazy?
I think they're trading Scooble. I think it's over.
We'll see if that actually happens, but the Detroit Tigers over the weekend, a somewhat strong weekend for the Tigers. They take a series for my beloved Texas Rangers on the road. They've won five out of their last six games. Tarek Skubal, speaking of, if he can maintain his health, bounced back nicely from a rough start on the 24th against the Yankees to go out, face him again, this time on the road, win six, one earned run, struck out nine, looking a little bit more like the Skubal that we know, over 87 pitches. We know, as we have discussed many times here, Stramantha, that if you look at the overall makeup of the American League and some of the indicators, there's not that many teams that are sitting with a positive run differential. There's two of them, and it's the Red Sox and the Tigers. Tigers are 10 games under, plus 11 in a bad American League, and only five games back from a wild card. I don't think they're dead quite yet.
FanGraphs does give them a 20% chance to make the playoffs, so I guess that's technically right. They're not dead yet, but just because they had a winning weekend doesn't change the way that I view them in my mind as of right now. So sure. I think you're crazy. I think this is over. I think Scoob will get shipped off, and don't let him go to the Tampa Bay Rays because that could be a little dangerous.
Yep.
Call me crazy, but maybe FIFA should just have an appeals process. I know we're bringing this up for the third time today, but for as much back and forth as we've seen for the Flo Balogun red card saga, if FIFA simply had it in place to allow a team to appeal a decision like most club football organizations do, we see it in the English Premier League, we see it in UEFA, most leagues and tournaments worldwide have an appeals process. Maybe we could just avoid all of the ickiness that has come out in the last 24 hours by just making this the standard, no?
Yeah, maybe. Well, but then it wouldn't be this fun.
That's true.
That's it. That's all you got? You're not going to be as passionate? You were sitting out there.
We've talked about this so much, I don't want to drag it on. My hope would be, though, that considering how much I know people from other countries, and rightfully so, are worried about the precedent this might now put forward. What my hope is, maybe in this case, for the first time ever, two wrongs can make a right, and that they'll actually just make a change from this and set a new precedent of that we should just be able to appeal things.
America changing the world yet again.
That's all I know. You're welcome, world.
That's all I know. All right, am I up?
Yep.
Okay. Call me crazy. We're going to go back to the well here one more time. It failed us last year. How about this statement, which is a true statement? We could not get home with a Jazz assistant coach to win Most Improved Player of the Year last year. Did you see this story? Keontae George is serving as an assistant coach for the Utah Jazz during the summer league. But the Jazz might have another Most Improved candidate on its roster. Cody Williams, come on down. We might be ready to get hurt again. For those who don't know, Cody Williams, he was a Colorado player drafted in 2024, was a 10th overall selection by the Utah Jazz. Career's been off to a little bit of a rough start when you look at his first two seasons, averaging in his career just 7 points per game on 41% shooting. But Stormy, you look at the way his season ended. Put up 36 minutes a game, averaged 15 points along with 5.5 assists and 4.5 rebounds. It's got to improve the shooting a little bit here, but he's getting some run in summer league. He's a third-year guy, so he fits the criteria for most improved, showing a little bit of improvement as well. Filled out a bit, added some weight. Jazz might have a most improved candidate on the roster. Keep an eye out.
I can't call you crazy or not crazy because I don't know enough about the kid to warrant a true breakdown for you, but I trust your analysis. Last one for me. Call me crazy, but Brandon Ayuk is Antonio Brown without the success at this point. At least AB had 7,000 or 8,000 plus yard seasons before he went crazy. What Brandon Ayuk is doing is insane. All he had to do to put him in a position to get out of San Francisco and sign somewhere else was pay off his speeding ticket and be quiet for a couple weeks. He couldn't do it. Last week we see the post on YouTube where he, among other things, claims his relationship with the 49ers can never be repaired. And the only way he's going to Levi's Stadium is in October, because that's when the Washington Commanders come to town on Monday Night Football. Well, now he's fracturing that relationship as well. For those unaware, Ayuk and Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels are really close friends. Goes back to their ASU days. He has been, campaigning to go to Washington. Now he takes shots shots at Jaden Daniels over the week on social media because a video went out of a 49ers fan saying, F Brandon Ayuk basically to Jaden Daniels. Daniels laughs instead of coming out and defending Brandon Ayuk. So Ayuk was pissed off and didn't defend him. In some way, shape, or form, calls him a mama's boy, basically. They have unfollowed each other on social media now. Friends for years. Your one saving grace. The one bridge that you still had that wasn't burned down now, you're ruining. This is insane.
It is a little bit. I've also not cared at all. I assume we're never just going to see him play again.
You sign a four-year, $120 million extension, and this is what your career is now.
Everything seems to be fine. Maybe he shouldn't be the butt of a joke. Maybe we should care more about him because clearly he's going through something.
I'm good.
Okay.
I like what George Kittle had to say. If you go somewhere, like, you have fun with that. He's very talented. Looking at the NFL betting guide, by the way, at VSiN, only one person of 23 had San Francisco winning the division.
You.
Guess who it was? We'll be right back.